Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f***? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hello everybody and welcome to the Triple Jump podcast. It's a video game podcast. My name is Ben.
And my name is Peter.
Peter, how you doing?
Yeah, alright.
Tired, but we are
filming / recording a little later in the morning than usual, but I still feel tired. How unfair is that?
That's very unfair. There have been times where we've had to record like half an hour or an hour early and we've been absolutely dead to the world.
Yes.
But this time we got a little rest.
I did.
And still tired.
What a load of cod's wallop, quite frankly. Sorry to wheel out such language at this time of the day, but yeah, real cod's wallop. Welcome everybody. This is a video game podcast. We are sponsored each and every week by a video game relevant company. For some reason they never stick around for more than 1 week, but this week I have the ad read right here in front of me. Are you ready for it?
I'm so ready.
This week, even though EA promised us that Star Wars Squadrons was going to be... Oh, hello, Clint.
Sorry,
you're right
just,
there.
Just picking up a pen. Yeah.
They promised us Star Wars Squadrons was going to have no microtransactions. It was all going to be gravy and you could just go for it, right?
Yeah.
There is a piece of DLC. Launch DLC.
Oh, right? My goodness, yeah.
We're sponsored by it this week. It's called Star Wars Squadrons.
Okay.
And you play as lesser-known Star Wars universe character who has been invented solely for the purpose of this game, because apparently they can do that and just add things to the lore with video games, which seems dangerous, to be honest.
Yeah,
especially when the video games are bad. He's called Ron, and that's okay. It. No last name.
Right, he's just Ron.
So this allows you to play as a third faction, because obviously there's the New Galactic Republic, is that what they're called? The goodies?
Yeah.
And the baddies obviously are the Empire. Are they still the Empire? Yeah.
I'm not sure if they're the sort of Imperial Remnant or the First Order, because it's set after Return of the Jedi. So
yeah, it's between 6 and 7.
It's that transition period, yeah.
So there's a third faction, it's just called Ron's Squad.
Right.
And it's, R-O-N apostrophe S, it's Ron's Squad, and that's how it's stylized in the name of the DLC as well. Star Wars Squad Ron's. So even though they got the names the wrong way round, the words the wrong way round, it's still in keeping with the format of the title.
Well,
so
they could put Ron's in brackets, because then it's like
yes.
Star Wars Squad, and then it's like, oh, which squad? Ron's.
It's Ron's. It's Ron's squad. So yeah, this is Ron. He's very tall. He has a gun. And oh boy, I hope you like roguish charm, because he's got it. He's got it in buckets. And he wears a little velvet top hat. There we go.
Ooh,
that's what he looks like. He's introduced in this game. And if you want to play as his faction, which is, I think, largely just a troop of converted Toyota Previas with just jet engines on the side, then you can play as Star Wars Squad, and then in parentheses Ron's, at launch for just $25.99
a day.
Yes, absolutely.
That's great.
It's real too.
I'm really pleased that this new Star Wars game has even more for me to dive into and enjoy. That's fantastic news.
Yep.
He's blinking first. Is it? I'm really glad that's real.
It's not real. It's not real, Peter. Sorry. Squad in parentheses Rons is not real. No, of course, we are sponsored by our wonderful patrons over at patreon.com/team triple jump, where for as little as $1 per month. That's 25 cents per show, approximately, depending on the length of the month and how the weekends fall. You can get access to a weekly post that goes up on Tuesdays asking for questions for this show, and we might pick them and stick them in.
I've got a question.
Oh, yeah.
Where are we walking today?
We're gonna walk along Toyota Previa, I think, today.
Yeah, okay.
That's a good car, good family car. My family had one of those.
Yeah.
Spacious.
Ron's got loads
of them. Spacious, yeah, whole fleet.
More like spaceship. All right.
Brilliant. That's great. The car in front is a Toyota, more like the spaceship in front is a Toyota, right?
Oh, yeah, exactly.
Equally clever. We're walking along on Toyota Previa today in the video version because we still can't sit in the same room.
No, still.
I downloaded
in fact, more so than normal. We're now no longer, we're legally not allowed to do that.
It's we'll be arrested and the Queen will kill us. Mm. I downloaded the NHS Track and Trace app because I got a text from the National Health Service. I'm sure many people listening to this did, saying, please download our app. And I did. And I entered the first three letters or slash numbers of my postcode. And it said, you live in a high-risk area.
Yeah.
It's a danger zone here. Because people like to lick each other. That's just a northern thing. I've never understood it personally, but that's real. That's true. So, it's all fun. We can't be in the same room. Walking along a People Previa, that's it. And, our real sponsors are the patrons. They can ask questions just like
Richard Major. Dick Major has asked a question. I've just pre-ordered my first PS5 game. I got Demon's Souls for $64.99, and it would appear that games are going to be £65 to £70. That's quite a lot. But games are massive and can take ages to make, consisting tens of millions of dollars sometimes.
Costing.
I did think that was why. I did wonder why he'd not put consisting of, but, I just went with it. Costing tens of millions of dollars sometimes. My question is this. Would you rather pay £30 to £40 per game, but the game be half the size, or are you happy to pay the £70? For myself, games like Red Dead Redemption 2 were too big, and I would have actually enjoyed it more if it was scaled back.
I am all for cheaper games.
Yeah, me too.
Speaking of Star Wars Squadrons, that's one of those games that seems to sort of buck the trend.
Yeah.
It's not like gonna be a big old boy, right? It's fairly... Not, I don't want to say limited, but it's less, should we say, feature complete than perhaps a full Battlefront.
Yeah, we should probably say, of course, we film or record these podcasts before the weekend that they go out. And so at time of recording, the game isn't out yet. But from what we know, I think it's really, I think what they wanted to do was, like Battlefront, create a multiplayer dogfighting Star Wars game, with the focus on multiplayer. And then they thought we should probably also do a campaign with it. So I think there will be, I know there will be a campaign, but I suspect it won't be super long, won't be super in depth. I guess, again, a bit like Battlefront. I think they could afford to do that because they probably didn't have to absolutely go hard in terms of development with this game. They just had to create a very good flying engine, which I think they've done from scratch. It's not the Battlefront one. And from there, you kind of just add a little bit of padding and then you can ship the thing. So,
You've also got Tommy Hanks' Skateboarder remake that recently came out. Spyro, Crash Insane Trilogy. They're all sort of that sweet £30 to £35 mark.
Yeah.
And then that seems to have scaled up for the next gen, as Richard says. So Miles Morales is $51.99 on Amazon, and that's arguably fits into the same category as a Squadrons.
Yeah.
In that it's not a full sequel, but it's still going to be substantial, but it's not a full sequel. And then you look at Demon's Souls, which is the seemingly the sole first party exclusive launch title for PS5, and it's sitting at $64.99. That is expensive, and that's a big jump from the $49.99 standard we are at currently. And as Richard said, games are expensive to make, but they will try and fleece you for as much money as they can get away with. So I'm not a huge fan, especially considering that Demon's Souls isn't a new game. It looks brilliant, and it's going to be better and shinier and brought into 2020, or close to 2021 at that point when it releases. But it is not an original game, and so asking close to £70 for it is a lot. That's a lot.
Yeah, it's cheeky. I think you're right to say that, you know, obviously these games, they are getting longer. With the change in technology and the change in standards, you could maybe argue they're getting more expensive to make. But equally, yeah, I think they put the price as high as they think they can get away with, whether or not that like offsets or doesn't offset the production costs. You know, I think they've basically just, they will have done a lot of market research, and they will have established that we could probably get away with charging £70 or £60 for games. So we will do, you know, and if they'd done market research and people have been outraged saying, I won't pay more than 50, then these games would be £50, I suspect. So yeah, that aspect of it is, I mean, I can't say that's definitely the case, that's what they're doing, but I suspect it is. But to answer Richard's question more directly, I would say that I would much rather, in the coming generation, pay £30 to £40 for a game half the size of, say, Red Dead Redemption 2, which you and I have both said before, it was a bit too big for us. You know, it was a bit daunting, and it was, you know, a bit much. I didn't want to have to like wash my horse and like feed my camp and
bathe my boy.
Exactly, you had to have a bath and stuff, and you know, in some ways that's fantastic. It's amazing that games have that level of detail in them now, but equally, ugh, Christ, you
know? I could have done without the horse balls shrinking in the weather quite happily done without that.
Exactly. And you know, you have to wonder how things like Ubisoft games, you know, how they're going to change, because they've always been big games. Some of the scale is mostly just putting map markers on a big world, but whichever way you look at it, those worlds are probably only going to get bigger, and the map markers are probably only going to get more intensive in terms of what, you know, the bells and whistles on them. So I suspect those prices will be up there, £60 to £70.
Citation needed, but I believe 2K have already said, yeah, all our games are going to cost a fortune now going forward, so just deal with that. Ubisoft, I believe, for at least the first year, maybe, this was a while ago now that they said this, they're going to keep prices the same, I think. A lot of third-party launch titles already have price tags that are about £50, which is great, and arguably that's what it should be. Demon's Souls is a worrying look at where we're going to be shortly. And I don't know how Xbox is doing it, but certainly that's the way it's going on PS5. And it's not necessarily that it costs £15 more than I would be comfortable usually paying for a game. This is part of the reason why the only game I'm going to get at launch is Demon's Souls, because it's probably going to be realistically the only thing I play for about a month. And at that point, who knows, Spider-Man might be a bit cheaper, and I also just don't want to split my attention, you know, between two games.
I understand that, but I think we are just gonna have to see where it goes. I think Demon's Souls aside being $64.99, I think I have seen independent stuff where people are saying, yeah, it looks like it's going to be like £60 to £70 for games in general, whether or not Demon's Souls is £65. I've seen articles on Kotaku and stuff where it says the estimated going rate will be like £70, which is a bit worrying, really, but we'll have to see how it goes.
It's a lot, but there we go. It's time to move on to another section, Peter.
Yes, it is.
It's groundbreaking.
Yeah, it's unheard of, except, and this might be news to you, except in every other episode of the podcast that we've done.
Weird.
Yeah, weird. It's called What We Play In.
It's What We Play In time. Peter, what are you playing?
Been playing some games this week. First half of the week, I didn't play a great deal because I've been watching a lot of that there Disney Plus before The Mandalorian comes out at the end of the month. But all I played sort of top end of the week was I streamed Crash 3 and 105%ed it. Oh yeah!
Whoa, nice one.
That's right. Gold and platinum relics in every level. Got all the gems, did the secret levels, got the secret ending, which leads directly into Crash 4, which is out at time of publishing of this podcast. I'm probably playing it right now while you're listening. Having finished that and having had my fill for now of Tony Hawk's, which I've been playing the past couple of weeks, I thought, what do I play now? And I've had a copy of Horizon for a couple of months now. I got given it for my birthday, the Ultimate Edition or whatever it's called.
I'm really sorry to do this to you, Peter, but it's been 6 months since your birthday.
Yeah, I know.
Not two.
I know. I knew as I said it, but yeah, that's lockdown for you. Yeah. So that's been sitting there for a while, and I popped it into the console for the first time, got it installed, and was just about to launch it, and I was like, hang on, Peter, let's not Witcher 3 this, where you play 45 minutes of it and then you're unable to play it for a couple of weeks because Crash 4 and Spyro come out like 5 days later. So I held off, and instead I've just been playing Dreams because I thought, you know, that's very much pick up and play and then put down and leave when I want to. So
yes.
Yeah, I've been playing Dreams for most of the week now. So played all kinds of fun little games. Played more than one where you're a sphere rolling around in an obstacle course, but those are fun every time, I think. You know?
Yeah.
Unoriginal or not, they're a lot of fun.
Any meme levels?
I've not seen anything meme-y yet, but I've been going by stuff that's kind of either recommended by Media Molecule, like that playlist, or things that there was like another playlist that was essentially quote-unquote quality games rather than meme ones.
Right, poop posters.
Yeah, I've not gone out of my way for the poop posting games just yet because I wanted to, you know, at least get a couple of hours under my belt of playing, you know, top quality, this is what you can do with Dreams kind of games before I delve into the depths. But I've been watching Dreams videos on YouTube for, well, since it came out. Like every so often I'll head onto YouTube and people do like compilation videos of like cool Dreams games and stuff. So I've seen plenty, but it's my first time this week getting hands on with it at last. But yeah, played all kinds of things. Platformers. There was one where I was like a fox called Robin who had like a bow and arrow. That was only like 4 minutes long, but it was cute. I tried one that was, it seemed perfect for me by its title. It was called something like Tiny Quest.
Okay.
And I was like, oh, wow, that's great. And then I went into it, and what it was like, it was like a side-scrolling platform game. But the entire world, the entire level was zoomed right out. So it was like a doll's house. And it was zoomed so far out that your character was just really, really small. Like, because you could see the entirety of the level. And the very first prompt I got when I started the game was, press L1 if you lose track of me. So I guess it then sort of points a big arrow towards your, like, tiny, tiny, hard-to-see character. So I was like, okay, I don't want to play a platform game where I can't see my character. Thank you very much. So I left that one where it was. But, yeah, I think it's weird. It gave me the vibe of, like, I mean, Dreams, playing Dreams broadly, like, and clicking through the menus, it kind of reminded me of going on Flash game websites in, like, the noughties, where you would just click on random games based on their front logo or their title, and you wouldn't really know what you were going to get, and then it would be this little mini experience of a game that was either really good or really bad, sometimes very innovative, sometimes something you've played before 100 times. And it kind of brought back that feeling for me that for the first time since I used to go on like mini clip or whatever, you know. Yeah. So it's nice just to have that seemingly infinite source of mini games and creativity and silliness. So I'm looking forward to playing more.
Did you try your hand at creating anything, or are you just an observer for now?
Not yet. I want to have a go at it, but just this, I've only had I think 3 sessions with it, sitting down playing it, and I think, you know, maybe next week, or well, I guess I'll be playing other games next week, but maybe next time I pick it up I will try the creator, but I've not even clicked into it just to see what it looks like, so I don't even know. But have you had a go at that at all?
Or? No, I haven't even touched it. I've just literally started it up and played sort of the worst levels I could find.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's a special game. It's a really good game.
Mm. Yeah. And I thought the intro was very cute as well. I wasn't sure what to expect when I booted it up for the first time, but, you know, the way they introduce you to the world and with the narration and the visuals and stuff, I thought it was sweet. So,
they're very good at that. Media Molecule know how to do whimsy very well.
They do. With a British voice actor to say something nice.
Yeah. Yeah, it's lovely.
Mm. Yeah, very good. So what about you, Ben? What are you playing?
Well, I've almost exclusively been playing Bioshock Infinite.
Saw on your Twitter, yeah.
Yeah, so I again reached that sort of that point where I didn't really want to play anything that I had, or at least there was nothing new for me to play, and I know that there's new stuff coming out this weekend and very soon, but yeah, I just wasn't that fussed by anything, so I thought I'll download Bioshock Infinite, having obviously recently played through 1 and 2. Mm-hmm. and man, I really like Bioshock Infinite. Like, I like it a lot. I really, really enjoy the world. I think it's so fascinating and really interesting that how everything's tied together, and it's a bit wonky with the whole timeline stuff and dimension hopping. Like, I quite enjoy playing through Bioshock games and then watching summary videos afterwards, you know, people connecting dots that I might have missed and stuff like that.
Right, yeah.
And someone went in depth sort of trying to piece together the timeline. And while the timeline does sort of make sense, the dates that things are set don't make sense. You know, it implies that a certain character enlisted and was a war hero by the age of 12 and stuff. And it's like, okay, well, that clearly doesn't make a lot of sense at all.
Yeah.
And I know that it gets a lot of flack from people for basically just being a shooter. And I totally get that, because there are a lot of shooting sections in that game.
Mm-hmm.
But I just find the world and the story so interesting, and I really, really like it. And it's sad that we haven't had a Bioshock game in forever, and that Ken Levine ran away and is doing something else now. And I know that there's another one coming from a new studio, but that's going to be bloody ages away. But yeah, I played it in one sitting on Sunday. I just sat down and just played it from start to finish.
Oh, really? I didn't know that.
It wasn't that long. It's not that long. Like, I was, to be fair, I put it on easy and I just wanted to go through it again.
Yeah.
So there were, I didn't die once, which, right, you know, is to be expected, I suppose. But I was, you know, I got like maybe 60% of the Voxophone pickups and most of the collectibles as I went, so I was really, you know, smelling the roses. But I fired through that game, and then I ended up with about 60% of the trophies, and then that was it for me. I just thought, right, I can do this, because I've done it before. I've done it on PS3 as well when it came out,
right?
So I went through again, and I did a run where I followed a guide and got all of the collectibles, and then did it again on 1999 mode, which is the mode above hard, which then unlocks all the other difficulty trophies as well when you finish it. Wasn't allowed to use a dollar bill machine, which is the one where you buy ammo, and that really screwed me at a couple of points, because there were some shooting sections, particularly against the ghost mum, where you're just sort of trapped and you have no ammo, and it was awful, and I had to restart a checkpoint. Every time you die, it costs you 100 coin pennies. And if you run out of money, then you have to restart the chapter. Luckily, that didn't happen to me. And also, you can't press the up arrow for the little the up button on the D-pad for the little arrow on the ground to show you where you've got to go to next. So you sort of just have to go from memory, which isn't that hard, but you can get turned around in some areas. Mm-hmm. I did it last night, so I got my 175th platinum last night.
Fantastic.
Just really enjoyed it. Really enjoyed going back through that game. I think there's something very special about it, even if it had a very well-documented, troubled development cycle in which a lot of stuff was cut and altered, which might explain why there's quite so much shooting in it. But I still think it's very special. This weekend, at the time of recording, I am looking forward to the new season of Call of Duty Warzone, because initially, when things were looking a little bit better, me and some of my old school friends, you know, the rad dudes.
The old school ones.
Yes, exactly. We were going to meet up in person for the first time in probably years and years and years to have just a weekend of playing games and spending some time together. But obviously that's ruined now. So we've got one night of playing games. which I'm looking forward to, remotely, I should say, over the internet. So I'm looking forward to just spending all night dying in Call of Duty.
Oh, lovely. Mm. It's quite the weekend for games then, this weekend, in terms of releases. A bit of extra Call of Duty.
Ron Squad.
Crashy Bashy 4.
Yes. And absolutely. We'll be covering these games next week as well on the channel.
Yeah.
So if you want our thoughts on those, they'll be with you soon.
Mm, exciting. We should probably move on, though, to question number two, should we not?
Yes. Yes, we absolutely should.
Yeah.
This question comes from Transnosaurus Hex. 1 year of being a patron. Thank you for the superb content. My question... As a transgender individual, we very rarely get much representation in games, the largest arguably being Lev in the fantastic Last of Us 2. Do you think representation matters for LGBTQ+ in modern day gaming? Is acknowledging that we exist really as political as some game players make out? Sorry to bring the heavy questions out, and hope it's not too awkward. Keep up the great content. Much love to both of you. Thank you, Transnosaurus Hex. Thank you very
much. Thank you. Not awkward at all. Not awkward at all.
No.
No, it's a good question. It's difficult to know, like, how to measure whether something is as political as it's made out to be. I think by virtue of the fact that some people get really bothered by it, I think that is in itself what makes it kind of a political issue in a way, if you see what I mean. Mm. I think if everyone was very accepting of it, it obviously wouldn't be political, or it wouldn't be an issue, it wouldn't even almost be worth talking about, because we'd all just be doing it and it would be lovely and everyone would be getting represented and we'd have a great celebration of human diversity in all of our media. But yeah, I think because there are those people that get mad about it, it makes it a more contentious issue, I should say, only in the sense that, as I say, people get annoyed about it. It shouldn't be contentious, but it is, because some people find it, I don't even know what the word is, because I don't really understand why you would be bothered by that. You know, we are already, I think the past couple of years in particular, we seem to have made some very good steps towards, you know, representation in terms of video game protagonists, both in terms of ethnicities, gender, sexual orientation. I think one of the last big hurdles to cross is indeed the representation of trans people, because I think... yes, sexuality has been explored a bit more in the past few years than gender issues have. So, I was really pleased with the inclusion of Lev's character in The Last of Us. I thought it was a really good thing to do, and it was very well done. and respectfully done. And long may it continue is all I would say. And it's just a shame that there are those people out there who kick up a stink when these things happen. Mm. And that causes some developers and publishers, unfortunately, to question whether they should actually avoid including, you know, LGBTQ+ characters in their games, because they're like, oh, well, I don't want to alienate half my audience. Most companies don't do that. I think they know that the right thing to do is not listen to that kind of bigotry. But yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. Here's the thing, though, right? Mm. Trans people do exist. And you can't really pretend that they don't, which is seemingly what a lot of people seem to try to be doing. And that's awful. And they should absolutely be represented in media and games and so on. And speaking as someone who obviously isn't trans, to me at least, Lev's inclusion in The Last of Us Part 2 seemed to be really well handled. Because just a big deal was not made of it. It was just, here's Lev. Lev's trans. He's a person who exists in this world that we've created. And that was it. That was all there was to it. And that seemed to be sort of the way to do it. Because I think media does have a huge role to play in normalizing certain topics and themes for people. And I use the terms topics and themes in a very vague way. But you know what I mean. Mm. And the wheels of progress move very slowly, but as you said, things are moving in the right direction. I believe that there has been quite good representation in indie games for quite a while now, but certainly not in, you know, your standard AAA games and so on.
Yeah.
I would argue that there is obviously a balance to strike where it's not some sort of insidious, mass-marketed, look at our trans character in our game kind of move, you know, which I would imagine, I may be wrong, which I would imagine the trans community would also not particularly enjoy, just sort of a
tokenism.
Exactly, a trans character just included for the sake of it, you know. It would have to make sense within the game itself or the media itself. It shouldn't just be a sort of here is one of every color, you know, just picked out for the sake of a lineup and being PC, you know. It would have to make sense. And that, again, that's why I really liked Lev's inclusion in The Last of Us, because it just felt like just like when a character is gay in a game, which we've seen a lot more of over the last few years, a big deal's not made of it. It's just, oh, this character's gay. It doesn't matter. It shouldn't matter. And that's the place where hopefully we will get to, not in the too distant future. Hopefully it's not too far from now. And then when a trans character does appear in a game and wider media, it's just not a big deal. It's normal. But yeah, absolutely. I think, you know, trans people should definitely be represented in games, and hopefully, as they are continued to be represented, the people who do kick up a stink will perhaps kick up less of a stink. It sucks that they do that at all. But you know, we are moving in the right direction at least.
I think it's important when you say, you know, that it has to make sense or it has to be handled properly. I think one important thing to do is not just include a character and then go, oh, and they're trans, by the way. And that's the only mention or kind of detail that they go into. I think, like, you know, I think the way that someone who's perhaps struggling with their gender identity is portrayed in a game, you know, people who are going through that in real life, it can affect parts of their life, of course, like the way that people treat them or some of the challenges they face in life, just broadly speaking. And I think it's important to represent that where necessary as well. I'm not saying that every trans character needs to have this story where they're either celebrated by everyone and on the world that they're in, and it's a wonderful thing, and everyone just pretends that, you know, or everyone is blind to it. But equally, there shouldn't be this thing where they're horribly discriminated against, and you know, it's the worst of the worst that you do get out there in real life. I think in the same way with any kind of identity issue or, you know, people's race or people's socioeconomic status, people treat you in a different way based on those things. Whether they should or not is a whole different argument, but the fact is that, like, those things do happen. Mm-hmm. And it's as important, I think, to not just represent people of all different walks of life, but to probably include aspects of the way in which people respond to them in a game. Mm-hmm. Not to normalize the discrimination and say that's okay, let's all continue to do this, but, you know, to show that these things happen, unfortunately. You know, much like Lev was essentially outcast because of his identity, you know. Mm-hmm. Or because he wanted to shave his hair. And I think that's an important aspect. It shouldn't just be this happy, wonderful world where, hey, there are trans people here, but there's no discrimination against them. I think sometimes it's important to show the less pleasant side of something like that to bring awareness to it, I guess.
Yeah. Video games are meant to be inclusive and fun and, you know, accessible to everyone. So why not? Like, I wouldn't necessarily understand the argument against it, to be honest. But yeah, there's a whole lot of, you know, not that we would ever condone profiteering off the back of people's suffering, but there is a lot of, you know, untapped story potential in the character arc of a trans person. You know, as you said, you know, it's not easy being trans, and there's a whole lot of potential there that definitely hasn't been covered before. And I think that'd be really interesting. I'd be up for playing through that and experiencing that. You know, albeit in video game form and not in real life at all, because it's not equatable. But you know what I mean.
Mm. Yeah.
So the answer is yes, absolutely.
Yeah, definitely. It's time to now move on to something a little bit weird.
Yeah?
A little bit of a weird section here.
Okay. Is it weird news?
Oh, it is, but I don't have a thing to stack, but I'll just do it anyway.
All right, weird news. Very good.
Thanks.
This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
It's weird news time. Welcome to Weird News. Peter, do you have some weird news then?
I've got some slightly weird news. I don't know about you. I thought it was a weird light week this week for me. I struggled to find some weird news this week.
Really? Okay.
Yeah, I did. Why? Were you absolutely swamped with
options? Oh, mate, can't move for weird news. Me? Yeah. No, I was gifted one on Twitter, so I didn't even have to look.
Right, fine. not a lot going on this week. But fortunately, our go-to, Luke Plunkett from Kotaku, has done a write-up for a slightly weird thing that's happened.
Oh, okay.
Which you may have already read about. I'd already seen this. Among Us 2 cancelled 1 month after it was announced.
Oh, I think I've heard about this.
So are you aware of Among Us 1?
How can you not be?
Yeah. Yeah.
What is it?
It's the latest thing on Twitch. I think it has been the number one game on Twitch for a while now. It's, I believe, about people running they're on a spaceship or something, and within the team of people who are trying to cooperate and all like run the area properly, there's a traitor in their midst. And you know, it's one of those games. If you play tabletop games and board games, you've probably played similar things. It's quite a common mechanic in things like Ultimate Werewolf or Dead of Winter, I think, has aspects of that as well. Mm-hmm. So something some of you will be familiar with. But here we go. So yeah, it's been doing very well, this game. And this is the write-up. Among Us 2 was announced 36 days ago. Today, it's being cancelled, so the developers of the latest very big thing on Twitch can instead focus all their energies on making the original better. So here is the write-up. Among Us 2 was announced 36 days ago. Today, it's being cancelled, so the developers of the latest very big thing on Twitch can instead focus all their energy on making the original better. Which is a slightly strange... I like how it only took them 36 days to announce a sequel and then go, oh wait, no, our first game's doing very
well.
We're
making loads of money on this one now.
Yeah. It's a very quick turnaround. In a blog post on the game's site, Puffballs United, one of the game's co-creators writes that the surge in popularity of the game, even in just the last few weeks, has made leaving the original behind, it was actually first released in 2018, and moving on to a sequel, maybe not the best idea. And there's a big chunk of text taken from the blog post, and there's a highlighted sentence within it which says, "We've decided to cancel Among Us 2 and instead put all our focus into improving Among Us 1. All of the content we had planned for Among Us 2 will instead go into Among Us 1." And Luke continues, "That's fine? It's definitely the cleaner, safer option in terms of the player base, even if it does create a ton of extra work for the team. Some of that new content, or at least the first of it that's due to hit, is stuff like a friend system, colorblind support, which would also add more colors to the game, and a new stage." And that's where the article ends. But wow. I think actually I agree with a comment that's been written on this article down below by Ninja840. Yeah, love that guy. "This game is great, but I do wonder about whether the game is going to have the legs to keep going." So, you know, it's certainly the latest big thing on Twitch at the moment, but would they be safer prepping for a sequel and maybe getting a new spike of hype when a whole new game comes out, or rather than just sort of bolstering the current experience? It just depends how replayable it is, I guess.
Yeah, I'm assuming they're a small team and they can't afford to maintain the original. Given its monumental success recently, as well as start developing a sequel. And they've got to choose, and they've obviously chosen to focus their efforts on the original, which I think is a good call, but it's whether or not they should include the perhaps iterations and new content that they were originally planning to do a sequel for to the original. That's questionable. I think they should probably hold on to that stuff, because as our best friend Ninja, what's his face, says,
840,
Ninja 840, our favorite guy who we know all about, as they say, I don't necessarily think this trend is going to last that long. You know, it was Fortnite 2 months ago. It's still Fall Guys, but it seems to have been eclipsed recently in terms of its memes. And that can, you know, I'm sure they both still have very sizable player bases, but your internet stardom can fade very quickly. So I think they should have some sort of preparations in place for a full sequel, because a lot of people will buy it, I would imagine. That'll make them a lot of money.
what has happened to Fall Guys? It's just, there was such a presence of it all over my Twitter, and now it's not really there anymore already.
PlayStation still retweets them, and they still get, in fact, I'm looking at a tweet now, 21,000 likes 17 hours ago. So they still do very well, but considering that they had, I think, hundreds of thousands of likes on tweets a month ago, you know, they're, again, still a huge player base, and people still really enjoying it, and it's nothing to do with how good the game is. But people just, you know, the mass population of online gamers are not the kind of people who stick in one place for too long. They just look for the next thing to move on to. And I think that'll probably happen to this game too. Got to be prepared for the future. It is weird though. One month.
Yeah.
And then they were ready to cancel it.
Yeah. Cool. So hit me back with some weird news. Weird me out.
I will. This comes courtesy of Not That Chris Hardwick on Twitter. Thank you very much.
Thank you
for sending this my way. This is from Kotaku, and this is from the co-director of Weird News, Ethan Gach. And the headline is, Randy Orton's tattoo artist sues Take-Two for using her designs in WWE games.
Oh my God, okay.
Which is interesting, because, and the article goes fully into it, but it sets a... It could potentially set a very interesting precedent for people whose likenesses are replicated in games who have tattoos.
Yeah.
So here we go. Take-Two and World Wrestling Entertainment are headed to trial after a judge ruled WWE 2K Games copied the work of an artist responsible for some of pro wrestler Randy Orton's tattoos. Orton's arms are fully inked from shoulder to hand, an intrinsic part of the four-time World Heavyweight Championship belt holder's stage appearance. I think he has more world titles than that, but that's fine, Ethan. You may not have known. According to the Hollywood Reporter, those designs include tribal tattoos, skulls, a Bible verse, and a dove and a rose, and a dove and rose, all of which are the work of artist Catherine Alexander. She's now suing Take-Two and WWE for reproducing her work in video games without her permission. There's a quote here. An issue of material fact exists as to whether Alexander suffered actual damages based on the value of the infringing use, Illinois federal judge Stacey Yandel wrote in a court order over the weekend. What that means is that the lawsuit will now go to trial for a jury to decide if the appearance of the tattoos in WWE 2K16, 17, and 18 amounts to copyright infringement, and if so, how much of the money the video game publisher will owe Alexander as a result. While Orton licensed his likeness to WWE, which in turn licensed it to Take-Two, what's at issue is whether Alexander retains some rights to the tattoos once they start being reproduced outside of Orton's body. One example of this is a faux sleeve with Orton's tattoo on it, WWE was apparently thinking of selling in 2009. According to her deposition, Alexander approached the organization about it at the time, and someone in its legal department reportedly laughed in her face before eventually offering her $450, which she declined at the time, while still making clear she hadn't given WWE permission to reproduce her designs.
Wow.
It's a little bit more here. Take-Two faced a similar lawsuit back in 2016 over LeBron James tattoos in the NBA 2K games. It won that case earlier this year, with the judge deciding that the in-game tattoos were too hard to make out to be considered obvious copies of the originals, and that tattoos were part of James and the other players' likenesses, giving them the right to license it along with their image to the NBA and Take-Two. That seemed to settle the issue, but the fact that a similar dispute is now headed to a jury trial could lead to a different outcome in the WWE 2K case, or Take-Two could simply use some small portion of the profits from its microtransaction-riddled games to settle out of court.
Wow, that's a weird one. I mean, I don't want to immediately... I think I fall quite firmly on one side of this argument, and I don't want to upset any tattoo artists here.
Right.
But I... absolutely agree that people shouldn't use other tattoo artists' artwork for tattoos without paying them or asking permission. People do that, you know, they see things on Twitter or Instagram or the internet, and they'll just take that image to a tattoo parlor and say, hey, can you do this for me? And actually, quite often, well, I don't know about how often it happens, but some tattoo parlors will, if you turn up with an image and they don't know where it's from or who's done it for you, or if you've just got it off the internet, they'll say, you know, hey, that's not, you know, we don't do that in this industry. Like, you're supposed to you know, credit each other or get someone to do a design for you.
Yeah.
So in that respect, I don't think art should be reproduced from one tattoo to the next on actual human flesh. But if it's just someone's likeness in a video game and that tattoo is on their arm or wherever, surely it can't not be in there. And I also don't see how the real life artist is really kind of losing out there. I guess maybe they could be, I don't know. But then on the other hand, I've just realised, I guess technically they've designed some art that has gone into a video game. Like,
yeah.
It's only like, if you were a concept artist, you would expect payment for that. Or if you were on the art team for a game, you know, you'd be paid. So thinking it from that angle, actually, maybe she did technically design that. She did design that tattoo that is in that game.
It's a tricky one. It's a tricky one. I'd argue she's well within her rights regarding the tattoo sleeve they were going to sell.
That
is
sure.
Just, you know, that's just her design on a sleeve, on a fabric that children can buy. That's not okay. And WWE's response to that is typically WWE.
Oh, yeah.
Just laugh at her and offer a disgustingly low amount of money to compensate her. Realm RPG-er in the comments. Another one that, you know, we love that. We love that person.
Yeah.
Well, so here's a question. If I buy artwork from an artist, am I not allowed to display that art? To take pictures of the room with the art in question without the artist's permission? If I am, then why should tattoos be any different? The alternative is that this dude cannot take any photographs of himself without first getting permission. It's complicated. I don't even know where that would definitely be an argument in favor of 2K, you know, or Take-Two Interactive, I should say, or whatever. Yeah, it's going to be an interesting one. We'll see how this goes, especially considering they'd already made a ruling about it, you know?
Yeah, we might find that going forward, like certain sports stars who are hoping that they might be in a... Or who are big names in a sport that is often turned into a video game, might find that they get tattoo artists to sign legal papers now saying, by the way, if I'm ever in a FIFA game or an MMA game or whatever, please can we use your tattoo without any extra charge or legal issues.
Well, CM Punk has a big Pepsi tattoo on his arm, and that was never in the games. They always just removed it or replaced it with something slightly different. And I think Braun Strowman has a Superman tattoo as well, the Superman logo crest. And I don't think that's usually in there either. So they, you know, they're all right with actual copyrighted designs from companies, but when it comes to artists, I suppose that's different. I really don't know. It's all very strange. So there we go.
I changed my stance halfway through my own argument when I first responded to that. So it is very, very difficult.
Yeah. It's a challenge. Yeah. It's a real challenge. Anyway, let's move on to another question.
Let's. So this one comes from Callum Story, who says, the Series X/S storage expansion cards have been priced at £220, almost as much as a Series S. Is it fair for this to be so expensive, given that Seagate have a monopoly on SSD storage for the new consoles? Do you think that the cost of extra storage will put people off switching to all digital consoles?
No.
Thank you, Callum.
No, I don't. I don't think it will. The Series, just to put this into some context, the Series S comes with a 512 gigabyte SSD. And the Series X comes with, it's meant to be a terabyte, but apparently it's 802 gigabytes of usable storage. The Series S, I think, it's a budget console. Part of the reason it's a budget console is because it doesn't have a lot of the bells and whistles that the Series X does, and it's not going to have as much storage, which obviously kind of sucks when you've got a digital console, and if you can't stream games, you've got to download them, and then you're going to have to cycle between deleting maybe, you know, only having two or three games on your console at a time, maybe four or five at a push. But it's like, and I'm sure if you explained that to someone who could only afford or was only really interested in the Series S, that they wouldn't be too thrilled about it. But you know, what choice do they have? You know, this is their only option. And Xbox knows this. Microsoft knows this. It's a bit like, in a very sort of silly video game version, it's like the analogy about buying a decent pair of boots, in that a wealthy person can buy a really expensive pair of boots that will last them for a long time, but a less wealthy person has to buy cheaper boots, which wear out quickly, and then they have to replace them. And it ends up costing them more money to keep buying cheap boots in the long term, but all they can afford are the cheap boots.
Yeah.
And that's sort of, if you'll permit me slightly bending the metaphor, that's sort of what's happening here, in that the people who are going to buy a Series S because that's all they can afford, the cost of the expansion storage is irrelevant to them because they just want to get their foot in the door, and this is how they're going to do it. And all Microsoft wants is for them to be in the ecosystem, in the Xbox ecosystem, and that's all that matters to them. They can sell them ridiculous proprietary, you know, ridiculously priced proprietary stuff after the fact. And, you know, Sony's just as guilty of doing this with the Vita and the PSP, and that storage got cheaper as time went on, but it was so expensive, you know, those memory cards. And so, yeah, I think it's just a case of it probably won't matter that much to people. It's not going to, it might matter. It might well matter. That's not what I mean. It probably won't affect people's spending decisions if they've already decided that the S is for them, because there's a good chance that that's financially motivated, and storage just isn't going to be the cost of aftermarket storage isn't going to be an issue for them.
Yeah, I think I was a bit shocked by the price when I read that. I thought that's pretty wild. But then I thought, well, hang on, you know, for a start, like, at what point are you actually going to need that? Because like you say, I mean, like, I've never bought, I think I've ever bought extra storage for any console that I've had. Well, it wasn't really an option back in the day, but, you know, for the 360, I know people bought, like, multiple hard drives that you could, like, plug in and remove and stuff. I never did that. And, you know, with my PS4 currently, like, if I don't have room for a game, I'll probably just delete another game off it. And, you know, I'll just have to download it again at another time if I want to, or install it again another time if I want to play it. Like, it's, you just kind of have to go with it. You know, maybe different people have different gaming habits, but I'm only ever playing, like, maybe two or three games at once, or there might be like a game that I always have on there because I always dip into it, you know, on the regular. But as a general rule, like, when I'm playing a new game, I will have finished another game fairly recently. Like, when I installed Dreams and Horizon this week, I deleted The Last of Us off my console because I'm not going to be playing that for a while. I probably will eventually go back and give that another run through, but not for a while. So I think a lot of people won't feel the need to buy extra storage, whether they're on the X or the S. So in a sense, it won't be that off-putting. For those who feel like they will want extra storage, I don't know, maybe they've got to look at that price tag and think about it. But generally, I think the people who feel like they're going to want extra storage will be going for an X anyway. So, yeah. I think it's all very academic, and I think broadly speaking, it's not actually going to have as much of an effect as you might think, given that is quite a seemingly high price tag, or a lot of money to spend on storage.
Yeah, the price is expensive. As Callum says, Seagate has a monopoly on the SSD storage for the new consoles. They seemingly do. I mean, they appear to be the official producer, at least as far as the Series S and X are concerned, with this expansion card stuff. And it is expensive, and things will get cheaper over time. As soon as a comparably fast PS5 hard drive that's larger than a terabyte is available, I will get it, and I will upgrade it to put more on, because I do like having a lot of my games downloaded at once.
Right.
I do delete some stuff as I go. For example, WWE 2K Battlegrounds is gone. Like, I don't need it on there. I'm not going to play it again. And if I do, I'll re-download it. But I do have, you know, a small collection of games that I always keep on there, like Minecraft, which isn't that big. Dark Souls, Bloodborne, Borderlands 3, you know, which just keeps getting bigger and bigger with all the expansions and stuff. So I like having a lot of storage on my console, and I will be looking to upgrade mine when I can. Hopefully, right, it won't be £220, but I suppose the the difference here is that a lot of people will be paying not much more than £220 for an actual console anyway, with the Series S. So it's kind of shocking. It will make a difference for some people, but I imagine the vast majority of people who are buying it because it's cheap will not care, because they just want to be on the next gen, and that's it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's true. Yeah, absolutely.
Right. Well, it's time to move on to a very large chat.
Yes, it is. I'm ready this time.
Oh, okay. It's time for the big discussion. It's big discussion time. Time for a huge discussion. This comes from Duncan's Wilson, who says, "Hello, Blurry Ben and Tiny Peeper. So last week, Michelle on sale."
Tony Peeper there.
Oh, it's sorry, Tony Peeper. My mistake. So last week, Michel Ancel announced he was leaving Ubisoft to set up a wildlife sanctuary. Oh. Now people are speculating that this may be in relation to the current investigation into Ubisoft's toxic work culture, especially with regard to his management of Peter's just-out-of-reach fave Beyond Good and Evil 2. Just wondered what your thoughts are on how you think his departure will affect this project, despite them saying it's still going ahead, and if you have any thoughts on the later news, bearing in mind it's pure conjecture at this point. All the best, and congrats on the landmark 100k subs. Thank you very much, Duncan.
Thank you, Duncan.
So Michel Ancel, he's a big gaming boy. He did Rayman. He did Rayman Raving Rabbids.
He did a cry at E3. He was happy about Beyond Good and Evil. He did Peter Jackson's King Kong video game as well.
He did Peter Jackson's Kong King, yeah.
Yeah, which was actually a really good game. It's one of the best movie games out there, really.
It is.
So yeah, he's a big deal, especially sort of within the Ubisoft sphere. And I think I've seen some discussion about this, which we'll get to later on, which pertains or relates to him being a big deal at Ubisoft, which it kind of factors into this story to an extent. But first, I'll just read this this little write-up from gamesindustry.biz, which says, "Rayman and Beyond Good and Evil creator Michel Ancel has denied accusations of toxic mismanagement. The claims were first reported by French newspaper Libération over the weekend, highlighting harmful behaviours from Ancel, as well as various issues with the development of Beyond Good and Evil 2. The in-depth article was published alongside an interview with Ancel himself, who recently announced he is leaving the games industry to focus on his other passion, wildlife. Libération began working on its report 10 days prior to Ancel's departure. Around 15 Ubisoft Montpellier employees who worked with the creative director described him as a toxic personality around which the entire studio's grotesque organization revolved. Oof. The employees also shared a feeling that Ancel was protected by his friendship with Ubisoft CEO Yves Guillemot. Ancel has been under investigation since early August, following Ubisoft's efforts to clear its workplaces from toxicity after the various accusations that have emerged against the publisher since July," it finishes. One thing I think that is worth pointing out, that I've seen people read, I'm obviously following this story quite in depth for obvious reasons. I've seen discussion on social media from people, and on Reddit as well, from people who haven't really informed themselves on the actual nature of this story here, who are just immediately assuming, because of what's going on at Ubisoft this year, that Michel Ancel is involved in sexual harassment at the office.
Mm-hmm.
There's no report of that so far. I don't think there's any indication that there's like an aspect to it in that sense. It's to do with the management and just the general workplace satisfaction and crunch, and people getting people going off like with exhaustion and stuff like that, and burnout, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So just for clarification there, but
I mean
disappointing to hear that this is what people are saying about the environment there. I can kind of I can believe it, but as Duncan Wilson says, at the moment there is a lot of conjecture to it still. The article talks about you know, the testimony of these, like, of these employees at Ubisoft Montpellier, and, you know, there's no reason to necessarily doubt what they're saying. Equally, though, Michel Ancel has taken to Instagram and given his side of the story, and he said that, you know, people have got a vendetta against him, and, you know, so it's just difficult to know exactly what's happening. And I think I've been guilty in the past of jumping on people the moment I hear that there's, like, bad news about them. I was quick to say that Ray Park, who plays Darth Maul, is a scumbag, because there was a story recently where he seemingly uploaded some revenge porn onto the internet, and then it turned out that maybe he didn't actually do that. So, you know, I was then quick to say, okay, wow, I should have maybe just waited before I went with that. So I'm reluctant to go into this and immediately say, well, Michel Ancel sounds like a dick, and it's a shame because I used to like the guy. But I don't know. I don't know if you've got any thoughts on this, if you've been, like, reading much about it.
Well, the first thing I heard about it was from you. It was weird. It was like the message I got read like Michel Ancel was a close personal friend of ours. It was just like, just so you know.
Just so you know.
And it was just you letting me know in case I hadn't seen. And you know, we got a podcast question about it and stuff.
I thought we might get a vague podcast question that just said, so how about that Michel Ancel story? You know, sometimes we get questions like that. So that's why I was telling you. Just if we get a non-specific question like that, it's about this story here.
It's about this guy.
Yeah.
Obviously, as you said, that's a real shame. If true, a real shame. It's somewhat, I mean, it's awful no matter which way you slice it, if true. But it is somewhat relieving that he isn't a part of the Ubisoft contingent of you know, sexual allegations. He's just a different kind. He's a different flavor of awful.
Yeah.
Which is way better. So, yeah, obviously we don't know if this is true. There's a few people coming out and saying it, but, like, it's hard to know what's real and what isn't without any concrete proof. I'm sure the investigation hopefully will reveal something, especially if he's good buddies with Yves, the CEO of Ubisoft. Who knows? Because there was a thing about Rocksteady the other month as well, last month, about how a newspaper broke a story about some women who said the workplace wasn't good, but it turned out to be apparently really outdated, and that the women who were still working there had said that story was published without their consent and based on old reports or something. It was all very weird, but you know, I suppose we will just have to wait for more information, because nothing seems to be that concrete at the moment, and it's a real shame. If true, a real shame, especially considering that, and I'm sorry to say it, Peter, Beyond Good and Evil 2 is never coming out.
Yeah, it sort of seems that way, doesn't it?
What do you feel? How do you feel about that?
Well, the thing is, he has allegedly not been working on the project for a while, or not closely. So that's something that's kind of come out from this, is that I think it was already, if you were really, really following very closely, you might have already known this, but I didn't really know that he was only doing 2 days a week. And But this is a whole, like, extra branch to it that I was reading about on the Beyond Good and Evil subreddit recently, where There was no citation or source to this, so there's no reason to necessarily believe it's true. But someone had done a forum post somewhere where they said that Michel Ancel has tried to leave Ubisoft for a while to go and do this wildlife thing, and Ubisoft didn't want him to go because he's such a big name in their company. And so they said to him, look, just do 2 days a week. And hey, how about this as a sweetener? We'll let you make Beyond Good and Evil 2. And so then he decided, well, I absolutely have to stay now because that's what I've always wanted to do. So that is allegedly part of the reason why he stayed on and part of the reason why the game is being made in the first place, which draws two things into question. Number one, the whole work structure around a guy being in 2 days a week when everyone else is working, you know, the office is active like 5-6 days a week. You know, he was like delegating to a lot of managers, and he was finding it allegedly finding it difficult to communicate with the team, which was causing strain on everyone. So that could be some source of this toxicity or this like mismanagement, given that he was like attached to the project but not really there. But also, if they kind of decided to allow, like, green light this project so that he would stay, and now he's left, like, what's going to happen to the game now that that's happened? I'd like to think they've invested too much in it now that they, like, to drop it, but mm-hmm. we know that games can be dropped, you know, almost like in their final form. They can just be dropped at the last minute. It's happened in the past, so yeah, who's to say? I think for the time being, they're definitely still working on it. They've been doing that for a long time. People have been questioning whether they're still working on the game or whether it's vaporware because it's not been at E3 for 3 years or 2 years. But that's just because they've just been working on it quietly. And if you really keep up with the development team online, they've been updating regularly. So or regularly enough to show that it's still active. So there's no question that it's still in development right now, but whether it lasts at this point, I just don't know. I don't know if it's going to happen.
I'm just looking at the Wikipedia page for Wild, which is another of his games. It was announced in 2014. Despite lead designer Michelle Ancel posting screenshots of the game on social media in January 2017, many journalists have cited the game to be vaporware. When Ancel announced his departure in September 2020, he stated that both Wild, it should say, and Beyond Good and Evil 2 were in capable hands with his departure.
And Wild also randomly had like 2 bits of concept art added to its website earlier this year.
Oh wow.
So just out of nowhere, very quietly, just like 2 extra photos made it up to the website. So
it's unacceptable, to be honest. Like I don't really understand the circumstances around it, obviously.
No.
But it was announced in 2014 for PS4. We've not seen it forever. This is Wild I'm talking about. And it's now 2020. The PS5 and the Xbox Series X are about to come out. And there's no sign of it. Mm. Just cancel it or update us. Like, yeah. I just don't understand. Because it looks really promising when it was announced. And
I was really excited about it.
I'm no fan of Beyond Good and Evil. I've never played it, so I can't say that I dislike it. It's just that it's not a personal favorite game of mine because I haven't played it. But it's got a cult following, and you can correct me here if I'm wrong, Peter, but I would imagine that part of that cult following is the involvement of the creative mind of Michelle Ancel. So with him now gone, and not knowing how far into development Beyond Good and Evil 2 is there really going to be that big of a market for this game outside of the cult followers of the original?
Yeah, maybe not. I think the original game people enjoyed just because I think it's a good quality game. I don't think, like, I went into that game not knowing who Michelle Ancel was. I only know who he is because I play Beyond Good and Evil 1. So I think Beyond Good and Evil 2 has people who want to play it because they played the first one and enjoyed it. But yeah, at this point, I think it's also had some interest because of Michelle Ancel and people now knowing his name. So yeah, I do think you lose a contingent of that audience now that he's no longer on the project. I've seen people in the comments of articles and people responding to the official tweets and stuff saying, "All right, well, if Ancel's out, I'm out too," kind of thing. Like, people have a lot of people have already dropped this game, so I don't know. I think we'll have to see how it looks when they deliver their next kind of milestone, which they said will be in the next year, and also see how this story develops. It's constantly developing. Michelle Ancel's been posting slightly weird analyses of the story where he's tried to address each point, but he's done it from the point of view of as though he's being interviewed by Beyond Good and Evil characters, which is really
okay,
weird.
Do you think?
I don't know if he is, but I mean, you know, he has had his name sort of dragged through the mud a bit.
Yeah, there's,
rightly or wrongly, maybe rightly, but
yeah, I was gonna say, I don't know if I necessarily yet feel sorry for him, but I do feel sorry for the rest of the team who now have a real uphill battle. for public opinion and also seemingly internally to get this game made without him. I do have a final question in that you say that he was seemingly tempted to stay at Ubisoft when he was offered the chance to work on Beyond Good and Evil, maybe as a sweetener, you know, work on a sequel.
Yeah.
And if he's been trying to leave for a while to do this wildlife stuff, is it a case of where there's smoke, there's fire in that maybe he was forced out by Ubisoft quietly because he's... And again, this is very much conjecture here, but if he's good mates with Yves Guillemot, maybe he was offered a quiet, non drag your name through the mud, he's gone because he was a naughty boy exit.
Yeah,
like, right, okay, maybe it's time for you to just go do your wildlife thing, and we'll just say that, you know, you can just put out a statement saying that you've left, when actually there is truth to this and he was on the chopping block anyway.
Yeah, I think that could well be the case. Like, I think, you know, they've been doing this investigation. They were doing the investigation internally, including Ansel. They were looking at everyone, essentially. And it said, it doesn't matter how close you are to the top brass, so we're still going to look at you. And it may well be that they then kind of discovered, okay, it's not a great place to work at Montpellier. Let's let him leave. And then at the same time, this article was being written and they interviewed Ansel about it. And then it's all kind of come out as a result of that. So I must admit, when I saw that he'd left in the middle of the game that he's surely been wanting to create for years and years and years. You know, he cried on stage at E3 because he was finally able to show a teaser for it. It seemed weird that he wanted to leave off his own back and not see it through. So I must admit, I smelled a rat. What I thought had happened, what I hoped had happened, was that he'd left because he didn't like the way the environment was. And so it was more like, you know, I'm a decent person and I can't continue to work in a place like this. But it seems that maybe that's not the case, and that, you know, he's not been a nice man to work for. There's more to know, I'm sure, in the coming weeks and months about this. And I will continue to follow his Instagram with bated breath. There's a post that came out 10 hours ago that I've not even read yet, where he's being interviewed by a different Beyond Good and Evil character, a cat lady.
This is very strange behavior.
It is.
You would have thought if he was done, he'd walk away, full stop.
Yeah, and there's more to come. He says at the bottom, he says the upcoming investigations will be by Paige and Jade. Jade's already done one. It's weird. It's a weird way to do it.
I hope this history doesn't make this look even worse than it may already be. In that, you know, his whole approach of like, oh, I'm being investigated by characters of my own creation. I only put my employees through living hell every day.
Yeah.
You know, almost like a serial killer. You look back at things they like interviews they did, and they were just sort of taunting police or whatever. I hope this doesn't age poorly. I hope obviously these allegations aren't true and that he hasn't been forced to leave because he was a really horrible man. But we will see. We will see. Yeah. That seems to have been a running theme at Ubisoft. So, potentially, I'm glad he's gone, but we'll see.
You found a photo of me, didn't you, recently, that you took when the game, the Beyond Good and Evil 2 game, was first revealed. And I'm looking really furious/disappointed because at the time, I thought it was like a total reboot, that they'd done like a Prey on it and they'd used the name. Yeah. And completely thrown away the old game. So I was livid. And then it became apparent it was a prequel. So I was like, oh, okay, now I'm excited for this. And you said that we sort of agreed that I should tweet that photo next time a bad thing happens with this game.
Didn't have to wait long, did we?
Well, we didn't have to wait long, but then I realised it's probably not appropriate to tweet a silly image of me being mad.
Looking sad at a video game. Yeah, maybe not.
People have been like, you know, had a horrible workplace. So I decided not to.
Wait until it's cancelled and then you can...
Yeah, maybe so.
Then you can recreate it, maybe. But there we are. That's everything. A lot talked about this week, a lot of big topics covered. As always, we welcome your feedback. If you'd like to tweet us or get in touch with us, you certainly can do, and you can do that via the following means.
We're over on YouTube and Twitch. That's youtube.com and twitch.tv/teamtriplejump. We do videos on YouTube, of course, but we also stream on both of those platforms. And when we do, we're modded by Lord Brotovich, Cecil Prumps, Mads Didactyl, and Trowling Badger. Social media, twitter.com and facebook.com/teamtriplejump. The Facebook is looked after by social media man Luke Eldon. We've got a Patreon, patreon.com/teamtriplejump. It allows you to ask questions on this podcast and all kinds of other rewards. The Discord is bit.ly/teamtriplejump. Jack and Joe are looking after that. Thank you, Jack and Joe. The audio version of this podcast, if you're watching on YouTube right now, you can get that at play.acast.com/s/triplejump, and it's all good podcast distributors. The website is triplej.mup, that's triplej.mp, and triplej.mup/shop is where you can look at our merch. There might be some changes coming up in the next month or so regarding that, so stay tuned, but we'll tell you more as and when. And finally, all of our live stream VODs are available at triplej.mup/VODs.
You can follow Peter on Instagram and Twitter at @ThatPeterAustin and myself just on Twitter at @Confused_Dude. We do lists every Tuesday and Thursday, streams every Monday, Thursday and Friday, Thursday being the joint stream, Blaze It on YouTube, Monday and Friday being the solo streams on Twitch. Worst Games Ever is fortnightly, Fridays for patrons of a certain tier, Sunday for everyone else. The podcast is every Saturday, and we do shows once every other week, peppered around the Worst Games Ever episodes. Please leave us a review on iTunes or your platform of choice. It helps something to do with Al Gore's rhythms. This week, there is an episode of Worst Games. As I said, that'll be out on Sunday, Friday for patrons. And there's also another playing every launch game video where I suffered through every single one of the Wii launch games. And a lot of them are very, very bad. So please go and watch that. That went out yesterday at the time I released this podcast. We've just got enough time, Peter, to talk about the sponsor for this week, which, of course, is Star Wars Squad. Ron's. It's Ron's Squad, where you can get the £399 DLC, launch DLC for Star Wars Squadrons, and play as Ron and his squads. He's tall, he wears a velvet top hat, he's got loads of roguish charm, and his fleet, which adds an entire third playable faction to the game, is a fleet of pre-loved Toyota Previas with space engines on the side.
The combination of the name Ron's Squad and just the sort of sci-fi vibe just reminds me of the Xantiar, Today on Xantiar, whatever it's called, where Deck Laser's symbiote is called Ron Johns.
Of course it is. Yeah. Please go and watch that video. That's an Adam Buxton brilliant, weird piece.
Yeah.
That you can watch on YouTube. Okay. Are we all done?
We're done.
Wonderful. Thanks for listening, everybody. We'll see you again next week. Bye, everybody.
Bye-bye. Bye.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.